I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. If you're thinking about it, chances are we're talking about it on WHYY's Radio Times.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
In a few weeks, schools will be back in session after a long, hot summer break. Christina Francis and Nebria Reed will be starting high school in Philadelphia. Last year, their eighth grade teacher, Michael Galbraith, introduced them to the Freedom Writers Project. It was started in California by a teacher back in the 1990s, and its goal is pretty straightforward, getting students to write by writing about their lives. Christine and Nebria and other students in Mr. Galbraith's class at Grover Washington Junior Middle School did just that. The results were deeply moving and personal as they wrote about their families, their hopes and losses, and their neighborhood. Many wrote about how they have been touched by violence. We've invited Christina Francis and Nebria Reed to join us this morning on Radio Times to talk about their class and to read from their journals. Later, we'll be joined by their teacher, Michael Galbraith. And we've also invited Walter Dallas of the New Freedom Theater to join us later in the show to talk about the value of arts and humanities in young people's lives. But let me first welcome Christina and Nebria to Radio Times. Nice to have you both here. Good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Hi.
Good morning. I wonder if I could start with you, Nebria, about how Mr. Galbraith introduced this whole writer's project to you. What did he say to the class?
He was like letting us know that we have experienced a lot. Like, he started it off last year before our time, and he thought we would like to do this again, and we offered and we liked it and we thought it was interesting. So he introduced us and told us a little about it and showed us some tapes and stuff about last year what he did and experience. So we thought it would be fun and great.
And he said, you guys have interesting lives. You have lives that are worth writing about. Is that right?
I guess, yes.
Same for you, Christina?
Well, he told our class, because every class has to do a service learning project.
Right.
And so he was helping us choose topics, and last year he had used the same topic with his class. So he introduced it to us and told us that this could be one of our choices, and he showed us some of the interviews, and all the kids agreed, so we all just jumped into it.
And you were interested in doing it? Were you excited about it, or were you nervous about it, Nebria?
I was excited. I thought it would be interesting and it could help me and my fellow classmates, and it was a lot of little violence going on in the school anyway, so it would have been fun and make a difference.
And a chance to write about it and perhaps talk about it as well. For you, were you nervous about this, Christina? Were you interested?
I wasn't nervous because a lot of the stuff that we talked about is stuff that we've been through and that we know about. Like, everything applied to us. Like, so it wasn't nothing big.
Well, each of you have brought something that you wrote, and we'd love to have you read just a couple of paragraphs from it. And I wonder, Nebria, if you could tell us a little bit about this essay that you wrote and how you got to write it.
This is the first person we ever interviewed for a project. We interviewed someone named Shannon Hudson's mother. She told us about her daughter, how she got murdered, she got killed by her baby father.
By her boyfriend?
Yes, by her boyfriend. She had got killed or whatever. So I asked questions. I was there to support her mother, and everyone was writing it. And as we were done interviewing, my teacher said, you want to write it. It's about if you was that person. I mean, not that person, but like an autobiography. But I wanted to write it as different. I didn't want to be like everyone else. So I just write it as if I was her,
mm-hmm.
and my own, and if her own words. And people took that a lot of people took that, liked that, and enjoyed the fact that I had.
And this was a mom that came to the class and talked to you and told what happened to her daughter. So you decided to be her daughter.
Yes, because it's interesting. I liked it.
Could you read a couple of paragraphs for us?
Sure. Here's my story. Derek and I were so in love. Everything was fine up until my brother died. Derek started to beat me, but I never told anyone. Derek and I were together for about 10 years. My mother and I were very close. She was my best friend. Anyway, back to my story. After a while of putting up with Derek's abuse, I decided that I was going to leave him. That Saturday before I was killed, he hit me again. Then he started coming around more often. He started to watch my every move. I thought that he was acting kind of weird, but decided to let it go. I would have never accepted him to kill me, baby. Maybe because I'm not his love, but because I was the mother of his children. So basically, I was saying like I was surprised, like she was surprised that he really killed her.
That he really killed her. Yeah,
and left their two kids behind.
It's really powerful. Was that hard to write for you to get into her?
Yes. Actually, when I was writing it, I felt a little, my eyes get watery. I really felt something. Even though it wasn't me, I really felt interested. I was like, wow.
You felt connected to her.
Yes, yeah. Really connected.
Now, Christina, tell us about your essay.
We interview a grandmother named Cynthia Davis about her daughter, her granddaughter, Jasmine Wallace. And I wrote my article from the grandmother's perspective. So it just tells about her granddaughter's life and stuff.
You want to read that? A couple paragraphs here?
Jasmine had lived by herself in an apartment located on 920 East Emerson Street. I didn't like her living alone, but because the building was very secure, I agreed to let her live there as long as I knew her schedule and got a phone call saying she was home safe every night. I loved her apartment so much. She decorated it with Oriental theme. Her lease was going to be up in January, and she was going to move back to Arizona. Someone entered my granddaughter's apartment with a .22 caliber handgun. While sleeping in her bed early one morning, she was shot in the head by the person that entered her apartment. Jasmine could have been shot as far back as December 6, 2005. Our family was unaware of this tragedy until December 8, 2005, when her friend went to her house with a key which she borrowed from me, when unable to get in contact with her after multiple phone calls and unanswered messages. Jasmine's friend then called me and said Jasmine was lying on the floor in a puddle of blood.
Again, a very powerful piece that you've written there, Christina. And this is based on this grandmother coming to your class and talking about what happened to her?
Yes, we interviewed the grandmom, and she told us like what her granddaughter's story was from the day she was born to the day she died. And I just took it.
Yeah. I mean, you feel some connection to it? I mean,
I feel like, when I was writing it, I was like, dang, somebody entered her house with a gun and just shot her. And I was like, that's some stuff, because that could happen to anybody. Like, so I was surprised.
Well, you know, I have to say, in the Philadelphia Inquirer did a series of articles about you all and the program and your teacher as well. And a lot of the stories and articles were about violence. I mean, were about people being killed and people being threatened. Is that pretty common, Christina, in your neighborhood, in your class, that kids your age have been touched by violence?
Whew, it was more than I thought it was.
You were surprised how common it was?
Yeah, because, well, we found out that we got the highest crime rate. We ain't even know stuff like that. And then when we started doing the project, you start finding out about stuff that you ain't know. Like, you find out a lot about your classmates from these type of journal entries and stuff, because people don't just open up about stuff like this.
I was wondering about that.
It takes journal entries like these to get to know people, like, so.
Same for you, Nabria?
Yes, I was surprised. Same thing. Very surprised.
You didn't know how prevalent violence was? How much violence there was?
No, I did not. I didn't know it was so much gun violence in the world today. Like, I really was very shocked when we went to Temple and write about it. And a lot of my classmates express their feelings. That's hard. That's really hard.
What was it like to get to know perhaps your classmates in a different kind of way? These are very personal journals and people saying things that they might never have told their friends before. Nabria?
Getting to know, like, I felt special. I felt like they were comfortable around me and their surroundings. Like, so I was there for them, even if it was a story that I didn't get or something that I was just amazed to. Like, I was still there to comfort them and talk to them and let them know it was okay. And I also let a lot of people know, like, well, I'm telling some of my, like, expressing some of my feelings that I can't, it's hard to do.
Sure.
Why won't you do it? So, like, I influenced a lot of people to write and read out loud to our classmates and stuff. So I thought it was good.
Well, and it must have felt like a safe place to do this, Christina, to be able to
At first, I wasn't very open to it because some stuff I don't like to express. Sure. But, like, as you get into it and you start to hear other people talking about it and you be like, we went through the same thing. Like, it's good.
Right. Do you feel like it made you better writers or it made you better people?
I think it made me a better person because it brought me aware of more stuff than I knew about. And it just is something new. A lot.
And maybe look at some of your friends and classmates and maybe even neighbors in a different kind of way.
Yeah, it make me look at people in a whole other way. You see what they're capable of doing and you're amazed.
Yeah. I read about you, Nabria, that you came to school more this year. Is that true?
Yes. Because I didn't know that I had this writing in me until Mr. G came along. Mr. Galbraith, sorry.
That's okay.
I didn't know I had so much writing in me. Christina said, I never really expressed my feelings to people and wrote about it and read it out loud and told my personal stuff. So, I was like, wow, I really can write like this. I didn't know that I had it in me. I really was surprised.
But did that make
It make me write. It make me a better person, actually, in this world. And today, less violence, less, I walk away more,
Is that right?
Try to make it peaceful more, influence other people to walk away and look ahead of life instead of going back. So, yeah.
And did it make you want to come to school?
Because
you wanted
all the time.
Something new for you?
Yeah, I woke up, I want to go to school. I want to write. I want to see what my classmates have today, what they're feeling today, how they feeling. Yeah.
I wanted to with your families, whether you've talked to your moms, for instance, about, have they seen your writing, Christina?
Yeah, my mom loves talking about this with me. She think it's good for, to be able to bring this type of stuff into the classroom. She think it's good for that. A lot of classrooms, they don't talk about this. It's just not a topic in the average classroom. So,
because it's very personal stuff we're talking about here. But did you find yourself talking more to your mom?
Yeah, I told my mom about everything. The interviews, the projects that we did, the marches, the temple experiences. My mom liked hearing about that because it's good to be able to experience stuff like this. Some people aren't able to do that.
But you were able to do that. We're almost out of time here. But, Nabria, I saw a picture of you in the paper with a sign that said, "Start snitching." That was at a demonstration or a march somewhere?
We were at an anti-violence march. Yeah. And really, really did not mean to fit that. But that's what we need to do. Mm-hmm. Not saying I'm going to snitch, but that's what we need to do in this world today.
To stand up.
Stand up for our city. If we wanted to make it a better place, that's what we need to do. So basically that's what I was really saying. If we want this world to be a better place, we should stand up and try to make this world a better place by start snitching. Not as in those terms, though.
I know. I understand. It's a complicated issue. But look, I want to thank you both for joining us today on Radio Times, and I congratulate you on your work. You're off to high school next year. And Nabria Reed, thank you so much.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Christina Francis, thanks to you as well.
Thank you. All
right. And I'm Marty Moscoen, and after this short break, we'll be talking to Mr. G, Mr. Galbraith, and he's the teacher that introduced these students to the Freedom Writers Project. And we'll also talk with Walter Dallas of the New Freedom Theater. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
I'm Mike McGrath. On the next You Bet Your Garden, I'll dig some expert advice out of the yard doctor, Michigan State turfgrass expert Trey Rogers, who'll tell you exactly what to do to help your lawn right now. Plus, how to deal with bees and wasps and chemical-free answers to all your garden questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY 91 FM.
The hip-hop group The Roots know how to raise the roof with their solid dance grooves and raise awareness with their provocative lyrics.
Every artist should know they have some sort of power. Whether or not we are the chosen ones to deliver that message, that remains to be seen.
I'm Ed Gordon, staying in step with The Roots next time on News and Notes from NPR News.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, how the war in Lebanon has affected prospects for a peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians. We'll hear from two longtime proponents of a two-state solution. Israeli Yossi Beilon is a member of the Knesset. Palestinian Sari Nusseibeh is president of Al-Quds University in East Jerusalem. Join us for the next Fresh Air. This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss Cohen. Earlier this year, the Philadelphia Inquirer featured a series about an eighth grade class at Grover Washington Junior Middle School in Philadelphia. The teacher had introduced the students to journaling, to writing diaries about their lives. Their results were moving and graphic accounts about the tough reality of being young in Philadelphia. We just met two of those students, Christina Francis and Nebria Reed. We're now joined by the teacher of this class, Michael Galbraith. He's an eighth grade teacher at Philadelphia's Grover Washington Junior Middle School. He's been there for 6 years, and it's in the only section of the city. And Michael Galbraith, nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Walter Dallas is the artistic director of the New Freedom Theater in North Philadelphia, and he wrote an interesting piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer recently about the importance of arts and humanities for young people, and that's why we wanted to get him in on this conversation. And Walter Dallas, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times. Good morning.
Good to be back. Thanks.
You're very welcome. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. We must be really proud of your students, Michael Galbraith.
I am very proud. They did a great job.
And they're
this
a hard act to follow, aren't they?
They are.
Where did this idea come from, and what got you interested in it?
A friend of mine, Bob Vogel from LaSalle University, brought Erin Gruel to our school a couple of years ago. He brought her three times, and she sparked incredible enthusiasm in my students for talking about their lives, opening up about their lives, and telling the world that there are some things that we need to change. I was overcome by a number of the things that the students wrote the first year, and I thought I could improve upon it, and last year was the result.
And this is her project, this writer's project, and grew out of her own experience with students in California.
Yes, she taught in Long Beach in the city, and she had a diverse group of students facing many challenges in high school, and they overcame. Of the 150 students that participated in the Freedom Writers Project, 150 went to college.
Wow. Wow. Now, I mean, and you've been a teacher for 6 years now. Did it bring out something different in your students that you didn't see in a more regular, structured curriculum?
The greatest thing that I saw come out of it was the sense of community that was built within the classroom. When students take risks like that with their writing, the other students appreciate it, recognize it, and they grow much closer. Boundaries come down, and they recognize so much that they have in common as opposed to the few differences that they do have.
The sense of community, of being together in the classroom.
Absolutely that, as well as the challenge that they have to navigate as teenagers, particularly challenges that they grow up in the city that it may be a little more difficult than some other students might face.
Let me turn to you, Walter Dallas, because you wrote this piece, an op-ed in the Philadelphia Inquirer, and this city has been dealing with the problem of violence in the city, especially violence perpetrated by young people against young people. And you really make an argument for bringing arts and humanities, music, theater, dance, sports, and other extracurricular activities back into the schools and back into the lives of young people. What do you see that does for young people?
It does a lot. And we just heard a couple of things that it does. One, it creates a different kind of community and a different kind of communication among teenagers. It also allows them an opportunity to express what they are feeling. I have to applaud Mr. G because a good teacher really inspires rather than tells or shows or demonstrates. Really inspires. And we heard how these two students discovered things about themselves that they didn't even know. And as a result, they now see other people in different ways. They see people in more positive ways now. And they feel more connected to the people around them and to themselves and to their families. So that's one of the things. We were doing a play at the time I wrote the op-ed called The Journey of a Gun, which followed, briefly, a young man is given a gun to prove himself among his peers, you know, hold this gun for me. And he brings it home and asks his little brother to keep it for him until later. The little brother then takes it to school, is playing with it, and thinks it's a toy, basically, and shoots two innocent kids. After the performance, we would always have a social worker and a police officer lead the discussion between the kid, the audience, and the cast, the kids in the audience, and the kids in the cast. Average age of the cast was 14 or 15.
Wow, perfect.
And we were doing it for 14, 15-year-old students. And the amazing thing was one of the questions that we always start with, how many of you know someone who has been shot with a gun or has been killed? 98% of the hands would go up in a 300-seat audience.
98%?
Yes. How many of you know how to get a gun? About half would go up. These are 14-year-olds. And so one of the things that they talked about, and they talked about this snitching, you know, no, don't snitch. And what it does is it creates a kind of a community. It creates a kind of society where the kids feel they belong. And what the arts does, what the arts do and sports, creates a kind of teamwork, community work that allows students to work together to find creative ways to settle differences and gives them a sense of different perspectives to the same situation.
Well, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking about Christina and Nebria and the kind of empathy
that
exactly. they felt with these people that they wrote about
exactly.
and the experiences that they had in the classroom. And I have a feeling that sort of undergirds what you're talking
absolutely.
About, Walter Dell.
Absolutely. And one of the things that we do at Freedom in terms of these students have discovered writing and have almost in a way discovered something totally new about themselves that have turned them on. Well, what we do at Freedom is we allow students to actually major. So we had a writing course. So you can major in writing, but you have to take dance. Yeah. You have to take acting. You have to take singing. You may not excel at any of those, but it gives you yet another outlet, another avenue. And if you can find the connection between your poetry and the music, then we've got maybe some new rappers coming along, some poets, some writers, and the vocal arts. So it gives a person to find all of those aspects of themselves that they don't necessarily know even exist.
Well, let me turn back to you, Michael Galbraith, because a lot of these essays that the kids wrote were published in the Philadelphia Inquirer. I read them all, and you know, some brought me to tears, and some I found really shocking. And I think what people maybe don't understand about kids growing up in the inner city is the pervasive violence, whether it's just walking through the neighborhood or within their own families or within the school setting or in many locations in their neighborhood. I wonder if you could just speak to that and help us understand how you think it affects kids.
I could speak to that all day.
I bet you could.
I found it really surprising when I moved to Philadelphia from an area in New England where the violence levels were much, much lower.
You were from Vermont, right?
Yes, that's correct. There's a
very
pretty
rural state.
Pretty stark difference.
Yep.
So they do, they face it. It's in the journey to school. It's while at school, the journey home from school, as well as when they're sitting out on their, you know, on their stoops after school or over the summer. The challenges that they face are, and it's more than just the violence. It's the perception of violence that I did not grow up with, and I'm guessing most people don't necessarily grow up with. To your question.
I have to tell you. I mean, what it reminds me is kids growing up in a war zone. You know, in Beirut, or
it's not just on the
Walter
streets.
Dallas.
It's on television. It's in the movies. I mean, they're bombarded with these violent images and assaults on other people's dignity. So that's part of that violence that they face every day.
Right.
We didn't have all day to talk about it, but we wanted to put it in that play, what it does to them. And we summed it up in about four lines. The first time you hear about someone getting shot, you go, what? The second time you hear about them getting shot, oh, no. The third time you go, And the fourth time you go, oh, well.
Right. Meaning you just get
life.
Used to it over time.
Yes. And that's what the kids say. You just kind of, and it's a defense. It's a survival mechanism as well. Because if they felt and expressed that every time, they would self destruct. So they kind of build. They kind of block it out. They get used to it and jaded in a sense.
Well, and I wonder too, Michael, when the kids wrote and then read some of these essays in the class, that really could bring up a lot of painful memories and experiences. Was that something you had to be on guard for to make sure that they didn't fall apart, or it didn't make it difficult for them to then live their life?
Well, I'm not a therapist. I did find that some of the students found it therapeutic. I remember Nabria came in one day during the school year, and she was really not in touch with what we were doing in the literacy block of the morning. And she just had her head in her journal, and she was scribbling away. And I took a quick peek at the first paragraph, and she was writing about a boy from the neighborhood who had been shot the night before. And I didn't stop her because I knew that she just needed to get this out. And she continued. I think she wrote for about an hour and a half that morning.
Wow.
In a two-hour period. She couldn't stop. She had to do it. And it was a powerful piece. She didn't read it for you today.
No.
But
maybe that was just for her. I mean, sometimes writing is not for everybody, but just
absolutely.
For yourself.
Absolutely.
Did it, though, make them better writers? I mean, was that also the goal, is to help them increase their confidence and ability to write?
I did a wee bit of research about that last year.
Yeah.
And I compared standard academic writing with the journal writing. And there was not a significant difference in terms of grammar usage and mechanics with their writing. But I think that it was important for them to do to help them understand what they have to, what the challenges that they face, mm-hmm. and that they do have a community of caring students around them that face the same challenges and difficulties. Because I agree with exactly with what Mr. Dallas said in terms of, I've seen the hands go up when the question is asked, how many of you have a family member or a friend who has been shot or killed? Mm-hmm. And it's more than 50% in almost every sample that I've come across in my classrooms.
Which is shocking. I mean, mm-hmm. as you say, we get used to this, Walter
it's
Dallas,
breathtaking.
But it is breathtaking and shocking. Let me just quickly reintroduce you. We're talking with Michael Galbraith and Walter Dallas. Michael Galbraith is an eighth grade teacher in Philadelphia's Grover Washington Junior Middle School. That's in the Olney section of the city, and he has introduced the students in his class to the Freedom Writers Project, and we heard from two of the students earlier in the hour. Walter Dallas is artistic director of the New Freedom Theater in North Philadelphia, and they not only put on plays, but they have a very busy classroom and school experience for young people as well. And we invited them to join us today on the show to talk about using arts to help kids in Philadelphia to tell their stories and to create a sense of community and a sense of connection and empathy to their world and to the people in their world. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WH. Why? Although, Walter Dallas, you know, you make a compelling case for the importance of arts, especially dealing with some of the problems that the kids in the inner city have to deal with. But why are the arts the first programs to be cut when schools are looking at budgets and tightening belts?
Unfortunately, people don't always, especially when they're under a budget crunch, don't always understand the importance of the arts, and so they think that they're frivolous or they're extracurricular, you know, in quotes, and therefore can go because mm-hmm. the kids need to do math and they need to do science. But what they take away is those very elements that socialize and humanize our students and teach them to be creative, to teach them to take those risks that are involved in being creative. It also provides a kind of structure. When I was in elementary school, we had what was called the Glee Club.
Sure.
And we had the flute choir.
You're showing your age there, Walter.
And we had all these things. And then we had to play sports. And so while I don't think I excelled at any of those, but the structure and the sense of team play and my role in that society, in that community, was very clear. And so I felt that I belonged. I didn't have to look elsewhere to belong. And we take away all of those things. I don't belong to a math class. I mean, I'm a student in the class, but I belong to the Glee Club because I put my part and I add my voice to the community voice. I'm part of a system. And you take that away, and then where do I put that energy? Where do I put that talent? Where do I learn to express myself? Where do I learn to make those connections that will help me, that will inspire me to discover more about who I am? When I taught a teen class, it's difficult for me to teach for a consecutive, you know, so many weeks because I travel so much. But, you know, there was a chance when I had 8 weeks that I could actually teach a class. I taught the teenagers. And what I discovered was, very early on, just interviewing them, is that they really wanted structure. They like structure. So I called it the Dallas Boot Camp. and they had to, everything had to start with sir and end with sir. I mean, I just took it to the, it just became almost campy.
Yeah.
But they loved it. And if the guys, if you were 2 minutes late, then you had to do so many push-ups. And if you, and the rest of the group had to count. And if you didn't count loudly enough, you had to do push-ups. And I thought, I'm being really ridiculous with this thing. But they loved it.
Wow.
The work was getting done too, but they loved being accountable. They loved knowing that if I'm not there, it can't happen. And so that, so the arts provide a kind of structure and discipline and rigor that, you know, other classes don't necessarily. I mean, students now don't know how to sit in an assembly together. I mean, they don't know how to come and sit.
Hmm.
I watch young people when they come to the theater, when we bring young groups in. And many of them don't know how to sit together.
Yeah.
We used to sit in assembly and learn whatever the topic was. We also learned how to be quiet and listen and pay attention and developed a kind of attention span that doesn't exist today.
Let me turn back to you, Michael Galbraith. And again, just from reading the series in The Inquirer, there were students in your class who I guess were more reluctant to participate and held back. And I wonder, was that okay with you? Did you feel like you wanted to kind of push them to express themselves, or were you waiting for them to tell you that they felt safe enough to read some of their essays?
I'll answer that with two answers.
Go ahead.
The first is, it has to be okay, because not everybody is okay with stepping up and putting their business out.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, a few students had a whole lot to say, and they held back, and I tried to push. I tried to get them to feel comfortable. I offered them the opportunity to let other students read their work, so at least their voice could be out there in some way.
Right.
And sooner or later, everybody did step up. I wouldn't say it was a competition between them, but they took the challenge of trying to rise to the levels of people with the most heart, with the most skill, with the most to say. And it was a very interesting interplay to see that sort of thing happen.
I bet. But I'm sure even if they weren't talking, they were listening very carefully.
Deeply.
Let me just read a couple of lines from, and this is one from Benjamin Jones that was printed in The Inquirer. And these are the, you know, these are the essays that really bring tears to your eyes. And he wrote something about his father. And he began with, "I wish he was dead. When I was born, he was there, but after a while, he just left. He would come in and out of my childhood life. My 7th birthday, he was supposed to come. He promised me weeks before. I was so surprised and hurt at the same time. Obviously, he didn't come to his birthday. And then he went on to say, but I got older. I learned it would be better if he was not around. But thanks to my mom and my sister, I'm very smart, handsome, and crazy, but a good person without my father." Was there a lot of talk about fathers and the absence of fathers?
There was a lot of talk about that. From varying at varying levels, some students have known their fathers their whole lives and have lived with their moms and dads their whole lives. Other students, their parents have separated in recent years or from the very beginning of their lives, and it's difficult to navigate for the students their feelings of ambivalence and hurt about their parents being apart, and particularly a parent that may not be, and mothers as well, mothers that aren't in their lives,
right.
And choose not to be.
And do you think, I mean, for, again, to understand what these kids are going through, that's an important feature that we should be aware of, is just how, for some of them, family is, you know, it's not Ozzie and Harriet.
Certainly.
Not even close.
And they need to make their own families. They double up with brothers and sisters, aunts and uncles, trying to make meaning of their reality, as well as, you know, trying to find people whose footsteps they'd like to follow and who'd like they'd like to emulate. And without all hands on deck, with two parents there, it's more difficult. You find lots of students that do gravitate towards aunts and uncles, though. They can get an extra hand with that.
We'll tell you what, a very short break, then we'll get back to our conversation with Michael Galbraith. He's an 8th grade teacher at Philadelphia's Grover Washington Junior Middle School, and introduced the students to a writing project. Walter Dallas is artistic director of the New Freedom Theater in North Philadelphia. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
WHYY presents an evening with David Sedaris at the Verizon Hall in the Kimmel Center on Sunday, October 8th at 8 p.m. For your membership pledge of $250, receive a pair of tickets to see the best-selling author, humorist, and National Public Radio commentator live at the Kimmel Center. Seating is limited and available right now only through WHYY. David Sedaris live at the Kimmel Center on Sunday, October 8th. Call 1-888-345-9499 or visit WHYY.org to reserve your seats and support WHYY today.
Next time on Day to Day. The band Gusters come a long way since its start 12 years ago at Tufts University.
When we listen to the stuff we wrote when we were 18 years old, it sounds a bit sophomoric to us, as it should. We were sophomores.
Guster, the college band still working to make the grade, next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
I'm Deborah Becker. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. How close is too close? An evangelical Christian says churches in the U.S. are in too tight with Washington. Also, the intelligence capabilities of Hezbollah. That's Public Radio's daily digest of news and culture here and now.
Today at noon on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane. We're talking about how the expressive and performance arts can help kids living in the inner city. We're talking with teacher Michael Galbraith and Walter Dallas, artistic director of the New Freedom Theater, and both of them work here in Philadelphia. Lines open at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me just pick up on one thing before we get to our callers, and this is to you, Walter Dallas. And you touched on this earlier, but especially with kids that don't have a parent that's been a consistent part of their life, the importance of mentors. And oftentimes, you know, a teacher teaching poetry or dance or sports can be that mentor person. But it's a big responsibility.
It's a big responsibility. I feel personally that it's an obligation. I'm where I am today, wherever that is, because of mentors. People
right?
like Lord Richards, who reached and said, come, I want you to, I see something, I want to nurture. So I've made that part of what I do at Freedom. So beyond the classroom, I try to make connections. For example, there's a young man who was below average in school, was tardy most of the time, or absent most of the time, wouldn't write, wouldn't communicate. And as a result of his experience at Freedom, he's now writing. He's now an A student, and he really wants to be a writer. So I've connected, because I've been in the business so long, I have so many friends, so I've connected him. He's like 17 and really just getting excited about writing with a friend of mine whose name is Charles Fuller, who won the Pulitzer Prize
Absolutely.
For A Soldier's Play. So they are now in touch, and Charles has agreed to take him on as a – so I'd like to make those connections. There's a young woman who – a young student who I think she's 17 going into her senior year – who was really, really great in my class and really smart, and I knew that she was just hungry for more. She decided at her school she has to do a senior project starting now for this time next year, completion. She's asked me to be her mentor for that particular project, a year-long commitment. And when someone reaches out in that direction, right. how can you say no?
Indeed.
So
Indeed.
Making those mentorship connections is very important. But what we do at Freedom is we make the older students mentors to the younger students coming in. So as students come in and pay the tuition in their first year, as they move along, they pay less tuition and take on more responsibility. And finally, those students who are 17, about to graduate or whatever from high school, are now not paying at all, but they are performing in productions like Journey of a Gun, and they are classroom demonstrators and mentors to the mm-hmm. younger students. So they take on that responsibility as they get older.
And this is something teachers have to think about and deal with, about that relationship with students, the kind of mentor relationship that I'm assuming a lot of students need and want.
Absolutely. They do reach out to you. Mm-hmm. They welcome an extra voice in their life. Sometimes they feel like you're too much in their business.
Yeah, always.
But you have to care about and love your students to form deep bonds with them and give them your best.
And kids know that. I mean, kids have radar for phonies, don't they?
They sure do.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. We've got Natalie from Philadelphia. Hi, Natalie. Go ahead, your Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I am executive director for an arts education organization called Build a Bridge here in Philadelphia. We primarily do work in with at-risk communities, primarily in group homes, shelters, mm-hmm. transitional homes. My question to both Mr. Dallas and Mr. Galbraith is, what support mechanisms do they feel need to be in place to really help with the success of the students in the arts classes, whether that's the parents? I heard one of the young ladies talk about, you know, her mom was involved and was really happy for her, whether that's the administrators or politicians, or what other support mechanisms need to be in place to really help arts educations that are reaching out to vulnerable communities.
Natalie, thanks for calling into Radio Times. We haven't really focused on parents, but I wonder, for even from your own experience, Walter Dallas, whether you know you see that as a critical player in helping kids explore themselves through the arts.
Absolutely. They need that support, be it a parent, be it a relative, a guardian, or in a couple of cases at Freedom, we have friends of the family who have taken on this particular child mm-hmm. and are there to support them. I think the most important thing at the core are teachers who love their students, teachers who know that they can learn from their students, and teachers who understand that they're not to tell, they're not to show, but to inspire. That's the first thing. The second thing is that we need the support of the school district, the school itself, and educators. We have to broaden an understanding in the community that says if you strip away the arts, if you don't pay the extra $12 in tax, education tax that we're asking for, you're going to lose the arts. You know, 12 years later, you'll have the crime rate will be what it is. Where are we now? 252 as of this morning?
Something like that.
And then it will cost you much more to build those prisons and to add more police and to think that that's a solution. Is a shame.
Right.
So if we have a long view of this, we can really win the war, as opposed to winning the battle by throwing money toward prisons and more policemen on the streets.
Yeah, go ahead, Michael.
I think it also can start with the principal. I'm going to give a plug to my principal, Rosenberg. He fully put his support behind this writing project, enjoyed having Aaron Gruel come in, speak to the students, and recognize the benefits of the arts. We have a fantastic jazz band, and it wouldn't be that way if it wasn't for the principal pushing that, getting the band out into the community and bringing community members that do play music into our school as well to share with the students.
And it is called Grover Washington Junior Middle School, right?
You got it.
Natalie, thanks for calling into Radio Times. One thing that you said, Walter Dallas, in the piece you wrote in The Inquirer was get some of this gambling money invested in arts education, arts experience.
Seems easy to me. Because billions are going to be coming. I mean, just
apparently.
Flowing. And the cost of adding orchestras and more writing workshops is not that much, relatively speaking. I mean, it's a drop in the bucket. Mm. So I think that if we are serious about, because kids take their cues from adults. If we strip those programs from the schools, then the kids take their cues from us. They must not be important. They don't know. They haven't had them. So if we give the right cues, and we know what they are, we're suffering now because of decisions we made 10, 15 years ago in this area. So if we've learned anything from history, we need to stop now and start looking at the long range. And some of this gambling money could be well put to use for that reason.
In fact, you're really saying that looking at the increase in violent crime in Philadelphia, that's there's a connection between that
so.
And the disinvestment in arts
Absolutely.
And humanities.
Absolutely. So the community that the kids had in school, in the orchestra, in the band, are now the group of guys hanging on the corner, the group of girls hanging down at the. Everybody needs to belong. Everybody wants to belong. It's you know, everybody needs to belong. And if there's nothing to belong to in the schools, we'll find it elsewhere.
Let me get to David from Marlton to join us. Hi, David. Go ahead. You're Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I just wanted to say something to Mr. G. I've been a literacy teacher for 25 years. I just finished my 25th year in the classroom this year, and 8 years teaching eighth graders. And at the end of this past school year, between standardized testing and helicopter parents and lots of other things, I was frustrated to the point where I was seriously considering getting into something else. And I have to tell you, I read the series in The Inquirer about your class, about what you're doing, about your amazing kids. And I got in touch with Aaron Gruel's organization. I guess it's out in California.
Yep.
And I read the books, and I'm on her mailing list, and I have that series in a special notebook on my desk. And I'm going to go back to my kids this September with a lot of new energy and inspiration. You have really done a lot to personally inspire me as a teacher. And I hope I can take a little sliver of what you shared with us in those newspaper stories and try to give some of that to my kids this fall and try to create something like what it is that you've done for your children. You have my respect and you have my thanks, and I think our community owes teachers like you a lot. I just wanted to say that. I'm glad I had a chance to call in today and say that to you in person.
Me too.
Thank you very much. You gave me chills when you said that. I'm delighted that you found something in the newspaper series about which you could take back to your kids. They have a lot to say. You know that as a man that's taught eighth graders for years and years. They need to talk about their world. This is a point developmentally where they start to recognize justice and injustice, and the injustices that surround them. They need to talk about them to fully understand them. I'm delighted that you're hooked up with a book, The Freedom Writer's Diaries, and I know that the students will get a lot out of it.
Yeah. I'm sure they will, and I'm really excited, and I'm hoping that at some point I'm going to read somewhere that you'll be doing a workshop or something that I can get to myself and get all my colleagues to, because I'd like to get everybody that I work with as excited as I am right now.
That's great, David.
The first August in a while, I've been really looking forward to going back.
Well, and that says a lot as a longtime teacher, David, and you're lucky students, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Thanks so much for
the
call.
Thank you again.
Sure. Thanks very much. Are you also feeling that you know, getting into gear as you know that school's a couple weeks away?
Certainly. I have about 10 days left.
but who's counting, right?
Yeah, no, exactly.
No, who is counting? I am looking forward to getting back. And the students were on summer vacation, so they may not have had a chance to take a look at the articles over their summer vacations, my incoming eighth graders. Mm-hmm. And I'm really looking forward to sharing those with them. Hopefully that can kick off the year in the right way so that they'll be inspired to do something similar.
You know, I talked to your two students about their parents, and I wonder, you know, how involved they got in this project. And is this something that really is just between you and the students, or are parents invited to be part of it as well?
During conferencing, certain students, we talked about, it was report card pickups, and students would be willing to share with their parents some of the things that they had written. And there were some things that really surprised parents in the journals. And I thought it was wonderful that the students were willing to share their personal writings with their folks. There's a particular student who I'm not going to put out there, but she talked about the pain of the rejection of her grandmother in there. And the mom didn't really know it. And Heather, she explored the pain of rejection by her grandmother, and it was on racial grounds. And I think they started to make some progress toward a reconciliation. There's no magic in this. It's a step-by-step piece, and some students pick it up, other students don't. But I'm looking forward to going back and getting going with it again.
Yeah, indeed.
I'd like to comment about one of the things one of your students said, that it made her look at people and situations very differently and with more empathy. So Freedom Theater is, again, trying to look at the broad view. We're working with young students and trying to change their perspective. But we're also looking at the other end of the spectrum, as it were. And we're going to be we're working with the Philadelphia prison systems to create a writing workshop within the Philadelphia prison system. We took a show that we did at Freedom Theater called Emergency to one of the prisons as a donation to the community. They liked it so much we took it to all of the prisons in the system. And after the talkbacks, during the talkbacks, the prisoners said that they really wanted, that they had a lot on their minds that they wanted to say, to express, but they had no outlet. Would we please come into a writing workshop? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it works with kids, it works with adults, and it certainly works with these prisoners we met who were confined and needed expression. And hopefully, if these men that we saw and these women can find a new way of looking at themselves and a new way of empathizing with other people upon their release, there might be a new kind of life waiting for them as a result of writing.
Well, and it's also difficult to think of the kids that are not in school. They might have dropped out. They might be hanging on the corner, who are not connected to anything that would inspire or help them explore themselves through the arts. You know, I mean that's really the group that's
where the outreach is needed. Right. And it's where organizations like ours and schools and the young lady who called in first, where we really need to reach out to each other and find ways of bridging the very gap that you're talking about.
Let me get Rena from Kensington to join us. Hi, Rena. Go ahead, your radio time.
Thank you so much for doing this show.
You're welcome.
I run a leadership program through the arts for teenage girls in Kensington. And our leadership group recently performed a play that they wrote. It was a three-month process, and this play involved all forms of artistic expression, from dance to music to videography and monologue, and really gave each girl their own artistic outlet that they were passionate about to do this play. And it was healing and brought them more together, like your guests were saying. And these girls, you know, chose to come here. They have no programs like this in their schools, and they came here every day after school to put this together, and just which reinforced to me how important it was that we're doing this at our center. And the thing that was interesting to me was towards the end of the process, when we actually got to the rehearsal point, they started doubting the importance of their play, because they couldn't understand how anybody would want to come see something that's about their lives, and if their lives really, you know, could be something that would be in theater. But then after they performed it and they saw it on the DVD, they really understood just how important it was what they did, and they understood how it was a testament to their courage in both the substance of what they wrote and just the fact that they could perform it.
Rena, that's a great story, and I mean, it fits in perfectly with what we've been talking about. I'm just curious, before we have to say goodbye to you, what's the name of the program?
It's called the Classy Unique Ladies. The acronym is CUL, which stands for Cool, and the girls came up with that themselves, and we just try to empower them in every way through this program. And it's at the Cardinal Bevilacqua Community Center.
Oh, that's great. I mean, what a great name, too. I like that. Thanks so much. Thanks so much
Thank
for calling
you.
Into Radio Times. We're almost out of time here. Just a quick question to you, Michael, about... Was it different between boys and girls in terms of participation, or no difference, or what?
I hadn't compared it that way. The first year that I did it, some of the leaders were boys, and they were balanced out by girls. There are different perspectives. Some of the guys are exposed to more violence, though the girls have to contend with it as well. This year, there was a particular student, David Leal, who just wrote the most incredible pieces, and he would write giant extended metaphors that would amaze you. Excuse me. I really can't say whether the males or the females were stronger at this. I got participation in both. I had students that were hesitant, both males and females. Some students are uncomfortable sharing about their lives. Excuse me. And others, you know, others were giant every week. They were giant.
Oh, I thank you so much. Congratulate you both on your various programs. And I thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times. Walter Dallas, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And Michael Galbraith, thank you very much as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And we heard earlier in the hour from Christina Francis and Nabria Reed. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and you're listening to WHYY-FM Philadelphia, serving Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and worldwide at WHYY.org.